Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dare, Minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. Now it's time to 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 31, 2016, or it's 8/28/2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Hard Ground. I'm pressing home the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as onward bound, be up at my feet on higher ground. Now let me hop and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land, a higher place than I have found, yet that my feet on higher ground. My heart has no desire to stay, for doubts arise and fears dismay. Though some may dwell like these abound, my prayer, my aim is higher ground. Now let me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land, a higher place than I have found, now put my feet on higher ground. I want to live above the world, for Satan's dart set me ahurl. For faith has caught that joyful sound, the song of saints on higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land, a higher place than I have found, now put my feet on higher ground. I want to scale the utmost height and catch your gleam of glory bright. But still I pray and heaven I found, now lead me on to higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land, a higher place than I have found, now plant my feet on higher ground. Okay, this is the part 10 of Everlasting Kingdom of Heaven. We're on page 9. And this is the Kingdom Jubilee by Brother Johnson, 1998. Let's do a prayer thought, though, taken once again. We're going to go to First Timothy chapter 4. We're going to start with verse 13, it says, shall I come give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine? Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by the prophecy, with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. So it says, neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy. It says, meditate upon these things, give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear unto all. Take heed unto thyself. Let's read that again. Meditate upon these things, give thyself wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y, to them, that thy profiting may appear unto all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. Okay, now it says here in Luke chapter 11, as we go there, let's see what we got here. Let's start with verse 1. And it came to pass that as he was praying in a certain place, when he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Master, teach us to pray, as John also taught his disciples. Now the Holy Spirit's been impressing me strong about prayer, his power in prayer. And so I think that this is the most important thing that we can learn, is how to pray. And pray often. And he said unto them, when you pray, say, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, as we forgive everyone that is indebted unto us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And he said unto them, Which of you shall have a friend, and shall go unto him at midnight, and say unto him, Friend, lend me 3 loaves, for a friend of mine in his journey has come to me, and I have nothing to set before him. And he from within shall answer and say, Trouble me not. The door is now shut, and my children are with me in bed. I cannot rise and give thee. I say unto you, though he will not rise and give him, because he is his friend, yet because of his importunity he will rise and give him as many as he needeth. And I say unto you, ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and unto him that knocketh, it shall be opened. If a son shall ask bread of any of you that is a father, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he for a fish give him a serpent? Or if he shall ask an egg, will he offer him a scorpion? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit unto them that ask him? That's the greatest gift that you can have given to you, is the Holy Spirit. That's the greatest gift that you can have. And so you know what, I'm just going to leave that right there at that. And we're going to go right here now on into our regular study. Take it from the track, Brother Johnson's track, Jubilee, the Kingdom, 1998. We're on page 9, and we're on part 10. And we're going to start right, we're going to do a little review from our last study. It says, Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion. Put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation. As saying to Zion, Thy Elohim reigneth. Isaiah 52:1-7. And 2 TGR 37, page 24. Now I want to go and open up Timely Greetings, Volume 2. And I want to read that page 37, as Leti Holliff wrote it. And see what we have here. That says, 1 John 1:4-6, And these things write we unto you, that your joy may be full. This then is the message which we have heard of him, and declare unto you that Yahweh is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him, we walk in darkness, and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. James 2:19-20. Thou believest that there is one Elohim, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? You obeying all the commandments and the statutes and the judgments of the moral law of Moses, you see, is your evidence that you have been born again, that you have been endowed with power from above, that you are enabled to choose the good and to refuse the evil, that you are the children of Yahweh, keeping the commandments and the statutes in the Yahweh, then is the light and shield of your life. It is the outward sign that by the life of Yahshua, you have overcome the enemy of your soul and body. This system of worship, therefore, is truly the righteousness by the faith that brings the righteousness of Yahshua in the people of Yahweh. Let us now, with ears open, wide open, hear the crier's bell. Isaiah 52:1-7, awake, awake. And I've already read that. Now we're going to go into our regular track. Again, pick up where we left off yesterday. It says, behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee. He is utterly cut off. Nahum 1:15. Here in the preceding two paragraphs, the prophetic word of Yahweh plainly declares by both Isaiah and Nahum, the prophets, that when we see these good tidings published by him whose feet are seen upon the mountains, and this is now taking place for the first time since the prophet wrote, it is to be a sign that the wicked, the violators of the sign of the law of Moses, are soon to be cut off from Elohim's people. 2 Timothy 3:37, page 25. This man that is publishing peace is not V.T. Hollis, it is Joshua, due to the fact that V.T. Hollis' feet were not seen upon the mountains. Churches, neither did he bring good tidings, nor did he publish peace, nor did he say to Judah to keep her solemn feast, perform her vows, for the wicked violators of the law of Moses shall no more pass through thee. He is utterly cut off. And now, since you are privileged to hear all these things, happy are you, says the Yahweh, if you do them. Job 13:17. Notice the picture in the center of the page of 2 TGR 37, page 25, which points out the man whose feet are seen up on the mountains, churches publishing salvation, the sanctuary system, which includes history, prophecy, commandments, statutes, and Yahweh's holy feast, the Elijah that restores all things. See Isaiah 52:1-7. Not V.T. Hollis. Now, here's where Brother Johnson is called himself the Elijah in another place. Right here, I just read it to you. Because he says that he is this man seen upon the mountains publishing peace. And he pointed out this picture of this man. He pointed out the picture, and he said, that Brother Johnson said, I am that man. I know that's what he told us. And so I believe that he was this man. And then he slips that little word Elijah in there. He said, the Elijah that restores all things, you see. So he says, the sanctuary system, which includes history, prophecy, commandments, statutes, and Yahweh's holy feast. Period. Then he puts a period there. He said, the Elijah that restores all things, that's Isaiah 52:1-7, and not V.T. Hollis. Now all of a sudden, this man, his name is Elijah, not V.T. Hollis. But yet in another place he says that Jehoshaphat was the antitypical Elijah. He was the Elijah John. But all of a sudden now we've got an Elijah that restores all things, but not the Jehoshaphat. So you see, this is what we're talking about here. These inconsistencies. First you're one thing and then you're another. Now, just a little earlier, Brother Sons was this Joshua that leads him into the land, and then all of a sudden this Joshua's changed horses in the middle of the stream, became another Joshua, 28 years apart, and then all of a sudden now Brother Johnson is this, he put a name on this man seen upon the mountains, publishing peace, and his name is Elijah. And Brother Johnson says, now I'm this Elijah, but you know what? There's so much truth to be straightened out here, and that's the reason I'm reading this. I'm not reading it to be critical at all. I'm reading this to show you, because Brother Johnson, he did a lot of research and he pulled out a lot of good quotes that he established from the timely greetings and so forth that is very important. And I'm glad he did this. It saves me a whole lot of work. So let's go ahead with Brother Johnson's talk. It says, recline no longer, brother or sister. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Yahweh is risen upon thee. Isaiah 60, verse 1. Now, Brother Johnson is telling these Seventh-day Adventists, and he's telling these Davidians, he says, now, recline no longer, brother, sister. Arise, shine, for thy light is come. Okay. Now, that's in Isaiah 60, verse 1. Now, he's telling these Adventists, he says, arise and shine, your light has come. No. Their light had already passed. The ones that he was addressing to arise and shine, their light had already passed. But he wasn't directing his light toward his congregation, this information. He was directing it toward those that had already come and gone and rejected his message to begin with. This is who Brother Johnson is addressing. He's saying, look, arise and shine. Your light's come. No. This is for his congregation sitting in front of him to arise and shine. Their light had come, and it had just come through Verlis W. Johnson, and he was trying to show them. He was trying to show us that our light had come, and I remember whenever he preached this from the pulpit, and I took it to heart. I believe that our light had come. There it come in 1998. I believe it had come. So it says here now, behold, upon the mountains, the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast. And then he's got parentheses, the truth of the sanctuary system. Okay. Perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. So when Brother Johnson asked me that one day, he says, what's causing us to lose all of our blessings? Do you know? You have an opinion? You have an idea? I said, yeah, I just got a message from heaven. It says, repent and restore the daily and all that you have trampled underfoot the last 32 years. Oh, he just got all indignant. And he's telling these Adventists, he says, keep us, he says, O Judah, and he's telling these Davidians, O Judah, keep these solemn feasts now, the truth of the sanctuary system. So when I told him that he had trampled that underfoot and that he is to repent and restore all that, he got real indignant and turned on me and said, I was lying when I said I got that message from heaven. So you see, he was wanting to tell them Adventists what to do, what they should do to have salvation. So you got to be careful when you're publishing salvation, claiming to be this mountain seen upon the this man seen upon the mountains publishing peace. For he is utterly cut off. Track 4, paragraph 61, page 2, Nahum 1:15. Avitihalif did not teach these things, that he was not this man. Thus he was not this man. Okay. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was light with his glory, Revelation 18:1. And it's good that Brother Johnson felt like that he was this man. Because indeed the message did come to him, for the first, he's the first one that received this message. And I believe that he was this man called. He was the first one called to fulfill this. I believe that. Law of Moses, prosperity, health, happiness, and eternity. For the summary of our study, I will have you seriously look at this illustration. Look at it, store it in your mind, and study it at your leisure. Yes, be convinced of the truth which I have tried to present to you. For it is your life, your prosperity, your health and happiness, your eternity. 2 TGR 37, page 24, paragraph 3. And 4, Deuteronomy, also chapter 4, verse 5 to 8. Now that you have read these facts, I hope that your eyes and ears are open, and that you are able to see and hear the voice of Elohim through his servants. Now, instead of saying his servant, singular, he's saying his servants. Well, who are these servants? It would have to be the servants, the prophets, that Rhodes Johnson is projecting from the scriptures. That he's inviting the Adventists to come and hear. Come and hear these prophets. Say, this is the way. Walk ye in it. Pray for eyesight, that your eyes may be anointed. Elohim is speaking unto you. And he demands your undivided attention, for this is the plan of salvation that we are here and dealing with. 2 TGR 37, 24, calls for obedience unto all the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments of the moral law of Moses, which is the only law of Moses that we can possibly be admonished to remember. The third part of Moses' law, the moral law. 2 TG 37, page 15. For the importance of obedience unto these requirements are pointed out in the writings of the Apostle Paul. For we are his workmanship, created in Yahshua Messiah unto good works, which Elohim hath before ordained that we should walk in them. Wherefore remember that ye being in time past, Gentiles of the flesh, who are called uncircumcision, by that which is called the circumcision of the flesh made by hand, that at that time you were without Yahshua, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope without Yahweh in the world, Ephesians 2, 10 and 12. Thus we see that in order to have Elohim, Yahshua, and hope, it is necessary to become a part of the commonwealth of Israel and be obedient unto the covenants. Number 1, Ten Commandments. Number 2, the statutes, the law of Moses, Leviticus 23, and Deuteronomy 4, 13 and 14. Since the word glory is associated with Isaiah 60, verse 1, Revelation 18, verse 1, it is proof that it applies to the Elijah that restores all things. All right, now here's where Willis Johnson again is using this name Elijah. And restores all things. And so he believes that he was the one that was called to restore all things. And indeed, he had a right to believe that. Because he did restore the sanctuary system back to its rightful order. He did have the light on that. And he had the creation calendar to prove it. And put it into operation and did actually practice the ordained system of true worship off and on at different times. Thus we see that in order to have Elohim and Yahshua and hope, it is necessary to become a part of the commonwealth of Israel and be obedient unto the covenants. Number 1, Ten Commandments. Number 2, the statutes, the law of Moses. Now Leviticus 23 and Deuteronomy 4, 13 and 14. Since the word glory is associated with Isaiah 60, verse 1, Revelation 18, 1, it is proof that it applies unto the Elijah that restores all things, the judgment of the living, the harvest, and the kingdom, the fifth angel's message. Now, what did I just say? I said a mouthful. Rhodes Johnson believed that this was his calling. To restore all things, The judgment of the living, the harvest, and the kingdom. The fifth angel's message. Well, since how he was only in the sixth seal, and that during the judgment of the dead period, and he had the 11th parabolic hour, which did not call for the judgment of the living, and the harvest, and the everlasting kingdom to be set up. In the 11th hour. It is for the 12th hour. And so this would have to be then a prophecy projection to that time from his time. 1998, so Brother Johnson, he had about 3.5 to 4 years there to see the fulfillment of what he was just preaching here. Notice, brethren, that it is the antitypical Elijah, V.T. Holliff, John the Baptist, that is herein telling you to restate the law of Moses and to remember it, for you cannot disregard his counsel and still expect his blessing. Now you see how inconsistent we are here. Brother Johnson's saying in one place that he's the Elijah, and now he's saying that V.T. Holliff is this Elijah, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, anyway, V.T. Holliff certainly did play the role of antitypical John when he told the people before he died in 1955 that the next great movement would be the branch, and that would be the coming of the Messiah, Yeshua, and the message. And so he saw it and he prophesied it. And so John the Baptist, that's what he did in the top. He pointed to the future Messiah that was to come, and to so forth. So V.T. Holliff did have an antitypical role in that Elijah type of scenario. That we are to remember his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments of the law of Moses. That we are to perform our vows and everything that was written by Moses, except the laws regulating sacrifices as that law ended at the cross. Neither are we to execute the civil laws written by Moses as long as we are bound by the nations wherein we are. Thus we realize that the only part of the law of Moses that we are to obey now is the law of the sanctuary, the plan of salvation, the true worship system, and the calendar system until we become a nation. A government of our own. At that time, we will then be obligated to execute the second part of the Mosaic law, the civil law. Beware of rejecting new light sent by Elohim, closing hours of the pre-harvest. So Brother Johnson acknowledges that he only has the pre-harvest message right here, and that we are to enter into a second phase of the Mosaic law, and that is getting into the actual harvest and the restoration of a theocracy, or the establishing of a theocracy. That means church and civil laws put together and one king ruling over all of it. That's what a theocracy is. One central ruler. That's what the Adventists have. They have a central ruler, the General Conference President. They have a counterfeit system of the law of Moses and how it is a treaty to be set up. Alright, it says, let's continue to read. We must not for a moment think that there is no more light, no more truth to be given us. We are in danger of becoming careless by our indifference to losing our sanctifying power of the truth and consoling ourselves with the thought, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. While we hold fast unto the truth which we have already received, we must not look with suspicion upon any new light that Elohim may send. Gospel Workers, page 310, paragraph 4. Well, you know, it's a very tricky situation when you're in the driver's seat as the prophet and the leader of the everlasting kingdom of heaven here on earth and been given the first opportunity to be so. And that's what Brother Johnson, he was given the first opportunity by virtue of the birthright law. And what a golden opportunity. But I dare say, though, without it being left on record and published, we would not have this outline that we are so easily following now to project the real. And so Brother Johnson really is laying down a type here. The 11th hour, the 10th and the 11th hour Adventists. That's what I call them, the 10th and the 11th hour Adventists. That's what it should just really be been called. They laid down a type. And the 12th hour Adventists, that's who we are. I've never called it that, but that's who we are. We are unfolding now and fulfilling what they prophesied in the type, where we are now fulfilling the antitype. So type and antitype is more than just type was laid down in the Old Testament, and then we have to find the antitypical fulfillment in our day of each and every one of these here prophecies. No, or these types. No, we have type example set between the firstborn and the secondborn. Firstborn and secondborn. The firstborn puts down the type. The secondborn fulfills it. First time we've seen this. All right. But beware of rejecting that which is the truth. For the great danger with our people has been that of depending upon man and making flesh their arm. Those who have not been in the habit of searching the Bible for themselves or weighing evidence have confidence in the leading men and accept the decisions they make, and thus many will reject them. Very messages Elohim sends unto his people if these leading brethren do not accept them. No one should claim that he has all the light there is for Yahweh's people. The Yahweh will not tolerate this. He has said, I have set before thee an open door and no man can shut it. So Brother Johnson told me and the whole congregation at many different times that we have all the light that there is. And that if there's any more, it'll come on top of the light that we've already received. But it won't be given to another people. You see the fallacy, and you see what the trap he fell into? Well, he thought that that would only come to him, and his wife confirmed that very statement by a statement she made to me. On July the 14th, 2002, she said, if God has any new light for Brother W. Johnson, he'll give it to him, directly to him. He don't need no Denton Brunken to give Brother Johnson new light. Okay, so she confirmed that. And here Brother Johnson said, no one should claim that he has all the light. So Brother Johnson claimed he had all the light, and if there's any more to come, that it'd come to him. There is for Elohim's people. The Yahweh will not tolerate this. He has said, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. Even if all the leading men should refuse light and truth, that door will still remain open. Well, Brother Johnson received the latest light and truth from heaven, given to him by someone else, and he refused it, but you know what? That door remained open, just like he wrote here and said it would remain open. The Yahweh will raise up men who will give the people the message for this time. Testimony Ministries, page 106, paragraph 4, through paragraph 107, paragraph 1. Or the page 107, paragraph 1. Should we not now consider ourselves the most fortunate people in the world for knowing these things beforehand? Shall we not be glad and thankful for having been warned beforehand that we have come almost to the time of the harvest, and that we have been given the opportunity to make ready for it? Shall we not be glad that we are not left in darkness? See, Brother Johnson is rejoicing, and he's telling us, shouldn't we be glad that we're not left in darkness? We should be rejoicing. And all the time he was in midnight darkness and didn't know it. This is the worst deception that a person can have. believing that he's in the light and he's dwelling in total darkness, that's horrible. And that we are now plainly shown that these are the closing hours of the pre-harvest. Your pre-harvest is in the sixth seal. It's in the sixth, the sixth seal for the judgment of the dead. And your pre-harvest is in the 11th hour. Not the 10th, but the 11th hour. And there hadn't been any revival reformation. There hadn't been any outpouring of the Holy Spirit on Pentecost. There hadn't been any of that in the pre-harvest. 1 TGR 21:19. You are now, brethren, brought to the truth that 1946 V.T. Hollis wrote. We were the most fortunate people in the world to be warned beforehand that we have come almost unto the time of the harvest. See? Almost unto the time of the harvest. Well, Brother Johnson thought in 1970 we had come to the time of the harvest. And he published information concerning that. But you know what? He was just entering into the pre-harvest period. And V.T. Hollis even wrote a tract called The Pre-11th Hour Extra. And Brother Johnson was just getting ready to enter into the 11th hour. The 11th parabolic hour, 1970. But V.T. Hollis had already published this here 24 years earlier. Okay. This, my brethren, was reprinted in 1953, which was 23 years after Shepherd Rod's message began. Just 2 years before he died, showing that 23 years after the beginning of the Shepherd Rod's message, the author V.T. Hollis wrote that we have come almost to the time of the harvest, showing that he did not know when the judgment for the living harvest would begin. And Brother Johnson didn't know either, because it wasn't given to him to know either, but he thought he did. And he preached it for 33 years, still looking for the harvest to begin. And he died in vain, and without the hope of ever sinning. The Shepherd Rod message met fulfillment in the end of the sixth seal. There it is right there. Whereas the harvest of judgment for the living began with the opening of the seventh seal. There you have it right there. Sixth seal, seventh seal. 1970, he said. Track number 3, page 46. Track 15, page 58. Brother Johnson's quoting from. V.T. Hollis on that. To further emphasize the point in question, let me draw your attention unto the cover of the tract number 1. The heading reads Pre-11th Hour Extra, making the Shepherd Rod the 10th Hour Movement. Oh, I'm glad he put that in there. That's just what I got through saying. Also, that the Shepherd Rod had their work in the midst of the 10th Hour, which was from 1930 to 1970. And he called it a movement, and I guess if it was a movement, it only lasted 40 years, and that's all. And it was over with. And Brother Johnson said that he had a movement, that ours was a movement, Gilead Center. Well, if it was a movement, then it was over in 2003. That's proven by the fact now, this historical fact. It's already been recorded as such. And the first movement, as he called Bashan, 1850 to 1890, he called that the Advent. The inspiration tells us there's three steps of the genuine movement overall. And that's your first, second, and third angel's messages with the three feeding pastures, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. That's all they had, an angel for each pasture. In the face of this fact, I want to say to you, my brethren, that it is herein proven that the Shepherd Rod was a 10th hour movement. There you are. It was a 10th hour movement. No, it was a 10th hour Protestant a protesting movement, like Martin Luther. Martin Luther proved that he was a protester and that he started the Reformation as a protester. That's where the word Protestant come from. It come from protesters. Okay? And Martin Luther, he started his protesting in 1500 A.D., come out of the Catholic Church, and he opened up the fifth parabolic hour on the parabolic time clock at the same time. Well, if it's been written already by Brother Johnson, V.P. Olive, that the Reformers did not have a movement. But they had every much of a movement as V.T. Olive had, the Shepherd Rod. They had every bit much of a movement as each one of those feeding pastors claimed to have had. Because their movement, their protest movement only lasted for a certain length of time, and then somebody else come and succeeded them and continued on the protest with a new doctrine and a new time frame. So you had seven churches. You have seven churches mentioned in Revelation 2 and 3, starting with Ephesus and ending with Thyatira, with Laodicea, the seventh heaven. And they all had protest movements. They had a certain period of time for them to have a protest movement. Laodicea is a protest movement, which is the only one that has a great paradox in it, and that it has three steps to their genuine movement, whereas the six churches before Laodicea, starting with Ephesus, they only had one protest movement for each doctrine that they represented. And whenever their time was up, that was the end of that church, and we had a new church and a new candlestick and a new leader come on the scene. So your seven churches were seven protest movement churches. Laodicea, like I said, was one that had the great paradox attached to it, in that it had a double leadership in it, and it had three steps to their genuine movement. That's what made it the great paradox. And Laodicea more than proved that they were the last protest church. Laodicea, the Advent, because they started off protesting against the Pope and the Catholic Church. That was their protest commission. The three angels' messages. Actually, they had the five angels' messages together by virtue of Revelation 14. But they were only given to the first three for them. For their 10th and 11th hour work, they were only given the three angels. But for the 12th hour, they had the fourth and the fifth angels. Okay, it says that in the face of this fact, I want to say to you, my brethren, that it is herein proven that the Shepherd Rod was the 10th hour movement of the daytime of the prophetic time clock, making V.T. Hollis the antitype of Shem. And you know who Shem was? He was the firstborn son of Noah, this side of the flood. When the family began to reign. And so now Brother Johnson all of a sudden is identifying V.T. Hollis as antitypical Shem, the firstborn of Noah. This is interesting. So V.T. Hollis got all kinds of titles. He got Elijah's title, and he got Shem's title, and he got Moses' title. Just wherever he needed to fit into a certain explanation of some of these types and antitypes, that's where he just all of a sudden grabbed that title, as shown on the 11th hour chart, seeing that Shem followed the 9th hour judgment message by Noah, and V.T. Ahartev followed the 9th hour judgment message by E.G. White, as a perfect type and antitypes, see 11th hour chart. And the irony of this thing is that Brother Johnson also followed the ninth hour message because he was the last segment of the fourth group of laborers called there in Matthew 20, verse 5, that's called at the ninth hour. So Brother Johnson couldn't separate himself from those ninth hour called laborers because he was one of them and didn't know it. Thus, the shepherd rod message was a tenth hour message, proven by the words pre-11th hour. So Brother Johnson, being called in the 10th hour, 1946, joined V.T. Hollis. The 10th hour reached up to 1970, so Brother Johnson got his pre-schooling. He got his pre-11th hour schooling right there in the 10th hour, as every messenger of the covenant has to have. They have to have their pre-schooling in the hour before the hour that they operate in. They have to get their homework. They've got to get their material together, what they're going to talk about. They got to learn it ahead of time. That was reprinted in 1953. So it says, thus the shepherd's rod message was a 10th hour message, proven by the words pre-11th hour. That was reprinted in 1953, 23 years from the beginning of the shepherd's rod message, showing that the 11th hour, comma, the harvest. You see, when you have improper grammar, then there's no way that you can teach the truth systematically aright. And Brother Johnson says he's got bad grammar here. He says, showing that the 11th hour, comma, the harvest, which he should have said in reality and in the truth, that the pre-11th hour, which is in the 10th hour, announcing the approaching of the 11th hour. And the 11th hour also is teaching a pre-harvest period that comes in the 12th hour, which Brother Johnson did not know. He thought that pre-11th hour, extra written by V.T. Hollis, was for him to announce the harvest in 1970. And I believe that so strongly that when I joined Brothers in 1970, I went to the Adventist Church someone on fire. I went there and I said, because Brother Sean said, now he's told me, he said, now go get the harvest. So I went back to the Adventist Church, and that's what I thought that would happen, that I'd go and just announce the truth that we had and tell people the truth, and they would start harvesting them. So that's the reason I worked so hard for 10 years for the Adventist Church from 1970 to 80. I worked hard to try to bring this harvest forward because of what he said here. The kingdom and the judgment for the living in the message of the fifth angel, Revelation 18:1-4. The Elijah message with the antitypical Joshua beginning in 1970. So now all of a sudden, Brother John says, well, I've got the Elijah's message with this antitypical Joshua, the son of Nun, with the opening of the seventh seal. So he said the seventh seal opened in 1970, in which all things will be restored, in which all things will be restored. So here we have 28 years later after 1970, where he said all things will be restored. Now here he is in 1998, 28 years, writing this information, showing that this stuff is yet future to be restored. And the 11th hour is fast waning. So he's running out of time. The fact that V.T. Hollis, as antitypical Moses, violated the demand of the time, that is, he did not institute the Yahshua's Supper at the Passover time at the beginning of his ministry in the 1930s while still in the antitypical Egypt, as Moses the type had done in Egypt at the beginning of his ministry, for Passover signifies deliverance. So now here Brother Johnson is using this word, V.T. Hollis violated the demand of the type. Well, V.T. Hollis did not violate anything, because it wasn't time. It wasn't time. Because P.T. Hollis didn't affect a movement coming out of Egypt. He's saying now V.T. Hollis announced the movement of the Adventists being called out of Egypt in 1930. No. The Adventists had been called out of Egypt in 1844 by Ellen G. White. And when it's time for them to be delivered at the end of their 40-year period, Yahweh sent two messengers, Jones and Wagner, with a message of righteousness by faith. You receive this, it says you'll be in the kingdom. Just what I told the people. If you receive Jones and Wagner's message, that you'll be in the kingdom by 1890. You have a 2-year period to accept and be in the kingdom. And then she, whenever it didn't happen, she wrote and said, well, the Adventist church has successfully made it back to Egypt. They have been steadily retreating back toward Egypt. Okay, so they came out in 1844 out of Egypt by Ellen G. White. So you see, this is what we get, what I'm called to straighten out. These things have to be straightened out. And I dare say if my brother Alan DeLong had studied these tracks with me as they came out, and we had studied them together, which I invited him to do time and time again, to come to my place, let us study this stuff as it unfolds together so we can understand it aright. He refused to do it. And that's why he's where he's at today and I'm where I'm at. All right. It says, instead, V.T. Hollis taught his followers to observe the Yahshua's Supper with the Mother Church, SDA, who were breaking the Passover law of Elohim written by Moses, showing that V.T. Hollis knew that the Davidian movement was a part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church by the name Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. Thus, V.T. Hollis taught the Davidians to break that law, making them lawbreakers, Elohim's law, written by Moses, as shown in Nehemiah 8:1-8. Well, the fact that Yahweh didn't give V.T. Hollis the creation calendar, because it wasn't time to restore the sanctuary and put the feast days back into operation. 1930 was not time for it. And when Moses brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, he brought them to Kadesh Barnea and restored all of that at Kadesh Barnea, at the Mount Horeb for 3 months, and received all of that. But since they rebelled there at Mount Horeb, after Moses had given them the law, then those that rebelled against that law was not required to keep the feast in the wilderness because of their rebellion. And those that are 20 years and younger, but the only ones told that they could enter into the promised land 40 years later only if they would renew their covenant and follow the divinely ordained system of true worship set up by Joshua. And those that were 20 years and older that agreed to do this, then they renewed their covenant, and then that's when the true feast days were set up to keep them back then. 1930 didn't call. He already proved that by giving Brother Johnson a creation calendar 40 years later and setting up true worship. He didn't give that to V.T. Hollis. So here Brother Johnson is indicting V.T. Hollis for not doing this himself. And all he had to look back and see that Yahweh didn't give that to V.T. Hollis. But Brother Johnson is accusing V.T. Hollis, falsely accusing him here. And so it says, by the Davidians going back to the SDA church to observe the Yahshua's Supper with the SDA brethren, as V.T. Hollis had directed them to do, the Davidians were responsible for encouraging the SDA church to break the law written by Moses. Now, Adventist Church has been keeping the Yahshua Supper 4 times a year, every 13th Sabbath, from 1844 on. They were living up to all the life they had, that Yahweh allowed them to have. So, B.T. Hollis wasn't teaching his people to go back and join the Adventist Church, take the Lord's Supper with them and teaching them to break the law of Moses. How could he, when he hadn't restored the law of Moses to begin with? How could he be accused of that? The law or commandment that the Yahweh's Supper be observed once a year at the beginning of the 15th day of the first month, Abib, making it a night affair at the end of the 14th day, as shown in Exodus 12:18, Leviticus 23:5-6, and Deuteronomy 16:5-6. In contrast to the instruction of these scriptures, the SDA Church observes the Yahshua Supper four times a year, in the morning instead of at night, and always on the Sabbath. Nearly their whole practice is in violation of the law given to govern the ordinance of the Yahshua Supper, for Isaiah 8:20 points out of that to the law and to the testimony. If they speak not according to his words, because there's no light in them, SDA and BSDA, how long will you continue to follow false teaching and to break Elohim's law? So now he's asking the Davidians and the Seventh Adventists, how long are you going to be following these false teachings and breaking Yahweh's law? The reason ancient Israel was delivered out of Egypt was because they kept the Passover before leaving Egypt, and because they had the blood of the Passover lamb on their doorpost, which covered their sins and protected them from the death angel. Still, more reason for their deliverance was the plan for the rebuilding of the sanctuary. Moses commanded Israel to borrow from the Egyptian jewels and gold, Exodus 11:2. That was to be used in the building of the sanctuary, the second year out of Egypt, at Mount Sinai, Exodus 40, verse 17. Through that system, the people received remission and of and blotting out of sin. And we only had that restored in 1970 for the Adventists, full restoration, so that they could be taught this. And we did indeed attempt to teach the Adventists. V.T. Holliff, as antitypical Moses, did not restore the sanctuary system. So here it is right here. Brother Johnson's over accusing him of teaching the Adventists to violate the law of Moses, and he hadn't even restored the sanctuary system. How could he be accused of teaching them to violate it when he didn't even know how to restore it to begin with? The house of antitypical Moses did not restore the sanctuary system, the plan of salvation, according to the law of Moses, through the heavenly sanctuary as a type called for, whereby the remission and the blotting out of sins could be administered by our great high priest, Yahshua Messiah, for the modern Israel, SDA. And DSDA, neither did Holliff restore the Passover Lord's Supper on the 14th day of even, as the type demanded him to do at the beginning of the ministry in the antitypical Egypt, as Moses had done at the beginning of his ministry in the typical Egypt. Thus, there was the type violated. I believe that you will agree with me that when a movement is called on the scene at the time pointed out by a type, it becomes an antitype, and that it is obligated to follow that type in every aspect possible. Okay, this brings the end of our study. This audio in contact us at the 11th hour call. At number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Yahweh is full of miracles by Elijah Davis. Y'all is full of miracles, surprises all over, and blessings that come in disguise, a pilgrim happy and merry. Open up your heart today, let the sun shine in. Happy banker is the one that y'all has. Nothing to compare to God's love anywhere. And it's the greatest time, it's a special time. the greatest.